You're listening to CPC Together, a podcast produced by Central Peninsula Church in the San Francisco Bay Area, where we talk about pretty much everything.
All right. Welcome back to the CPC Together podcast. We've got a little bit of a different rearrangement this morning.
You are really using a different voice.
I love it.
You've lowered it a couple tones.
I have to.
I like it.
I might try to put on a bit of a transatlantic flair.
Got a little pep in your step.
You need a little hat.
Can I request a Scottish brogue? I feel like that would be...
Ooh, I don't
Can
know
you talk like you're selling Scottish newspapers?
Like the what?
Extra.
Oh, extra, read all about it. Brandon preached this Sunday.
That's a southern.
That was a very southern accent. That was not
me. They're not accent specific.
Oh man.
Anyway, you were saying. Sorry, we rudely interrupted you.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Brandon, you preached this Sunday. That's new.
Yeah, I know.
And you weren't thrown out of the auditorium.
No, they usually are pretty good about firing you once you. They let like the Sunday pass, and then if they don't like what you said, then they fire you. And I haven't heard anything yet.
That could be good or bad.
Well, it is only Monday.
I could see it taking some prep time. You got to get the paperwork ready. And
sure.
Yeah.
Grace and truth.
Yeah.
Maybe their hope is that you resign so that there's no.
Yeah. So this. Yeah.
What do you call
Who
that?
Who is this mysterious voice, by the way, that we're all of our listeners
Yeah, well, that was going to be the next surprise. We've got the one and only, as far as I know, Daniel Grunwald.
My dad's name is Daniel Grunwald.
Oh, so Daniel Grunwald Jr.
Oh, no, we don't do that.
The second.
That's important. No, we don't do that either.
Pinstripe.
We say, I'm my own man.
Okay, we've got Daniel, I'm my own man, Grunwald, in the room with us. Welcome to the couch.
Real quick, Daniel. So if you and your dad decided that you wanted to continue your education and learn
Both
Spanish together. Okay. And you said, Dad, let's take a Spanish class at the local community college.
Los Daniels.
And then it came time to take attendance.
See?
How would they do that?
Ah, that's good. Why is it in Spanish?
Well, I was trying to paint the picture of a very specific hypothetical situation.
Well, you did that.
Would it make you feel better if it was a pottery class?
Yeah.
You know what we would probably do is just register like one person, and then we could take turns, you know? That way, half the schedule's freed up. We
and hope that your
work.
Professor never notices that and you guys are 30
I'm assuming
years apart
this
from
is probably a community college. I think we're going to be okay. Is that okay?
I thought maybe you would do like one of you is Dan and one of you is Daniel, or one of you is Danny.
He does go by Dan. I should say that.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Okay.
That solves all of it.
All right. Well, today we're going to play a little game. It's called Who You Gonna Call? Good reference, but not the point of the game. We're going to be asking a series of hypothetical questions in order. And the answer is going to be someone that you would call. It could be, are we restricting it to real people? I'll let this be a democratic effort.
I mean, I guess my only thing would be you need to give an explanation.
Okay.
So if I say I would call Michael W. Smith for baking show, I need to give you a reason why Michael W. Smith is good at baking.
And you can't say Jesus.
Oh, Jesus is off limits.
Off limits.
Okay.
Doesn't work.
Dang it. I was going to use him if trivia came up. I feel like he'd be so good at trivia.
He's very well read.
Yeah. I mean, he knows everything, so.
Yeah, that would be
Almost
an easy.
Seems unfair.
Yeah, that's a little bit too easy. That is unfair. we can have pulled that. All right. I'm going to start us off with a rather existential one.
Okay.
The hypothetical is this. You've been thrown into jail. You've been arrested.
Wow.
For some probably nefarious crime.
For some of us, that may not even be a hypothetical.
Looking around the room here, and I'm just seeing crimes that most people wouldn't even think of.
Super sinister.
The bail's posted $15,000.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Who are you going to call to get you out?
Wow. I was going to say Rachel, but I don't know if Rachel has that kind of scratch.
if you guys can help each other out.
I swear I'll Venmo you as soon as I get out and they give me my phone back.
I think there's a limit.
Yeah.
5,000.
Oh. Huh. Okay, for bail. Well, I did say during the sermon that I would call my father-in-law. And let's see, was I lying?
Let's find out.
So my father-in-law was a police officer.
Okay.
So I think whether or not I would truly call him for bail probably depends on what I did.
Yeah.
And how he would view it.
What if you were innocent, though?
Oh, yeah. Well, if I was innocent, then I would for sure call him.
Yeah. Would he believe you? I'm sure he's heard that before, you know?
I think he... Well, he would... Yeah. I think he would.
Wow.
Okay.
Blend, maybe not blindly, but I'm pretty sure he would believe me. I mean, this is getting very existential. Like, I feel like we need a... It helps to know what I did. Could you add what I did?
No, because it's not important. And okay. I'm also going to remove the technical number, because what's important here is who you're going to call because of the type of person you are, not necessarily how much money they have.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Someone that would be willing to give something up to help me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
When it's possible that you've committed some heinous crime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm hearing Brandon's father-in-law is a good option.
I think I'd still go father-in-law, although I'd have some shame to deal with, but I think I would do it because I think he would figure it out and then ask me questions later. What about you, Rachel? Who would you call? I could picture you in jail.
I often do.
I mean, the last time I was in jail, I called my mom. No, just kidding. I think I would call my mom because she would come out to bat for me.
Yeah.
And also pay up.
So if you were like protesting at a rally and you went to go like punch somebody and you realized that it was like a police officer and you punched him and knocked him out and that's why you went to jail, your mom would be like, oh, I got you.
Yeah.
That's what moms are for.
Because she'd probably figure it was an accident, you know?
Yeah.
They must have gotten the wrong person.
They must have, yeah.
She would immediately probably assume punched him by accident, you were innocent. You know? Yeah.
Wow. I would be so impressed that you knocked someone out. You could call me if that situation ever happens. Thank you. You could call me. Although, I don't know if I could come up with $15,000.
That's the tricky part.
Well, you took that away. Number aside.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
What if it's like $5? That's easy. I'll get $5. I'll let anyone out of prison for that. I think I'd probably also call my mom. Like Rachel said, moms go to bat. And no one does that better.
I think I wouldn't call my parents. And not just because they're out of state now.
Oh, yeah.
But because...
I feel like your parents would let you spend a few nights in jail.
I think they would too.
Be like, look, even if you're innocent, whatever you did, you need to think about it for a while and have three squares in your little...
That's my thought. And I could be wrong. That could just be childhood trauma speaking. But I think they'd let me deal with it. And that's also not a burden that I'd want to put on my parents. So I'd have a little bit of my own guilt keeping me in prison. Mm.
What if CPC started a bail fund?
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah.
We should take up a collection.
Yeah. We can we'll give it to Justin. Isn't he in care of the special needs fund?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll leave it up to his discretion.
Oh, we should all call Justin. Justin, I have the most special of needs.
Let's call him now.
But that leaves a handful of friends I could call. One of them is a police officer, so he'd also have some questions for me, probably.
Is he the one that showed up to service yesterday?
Yeah. But he's also about as loose with money as I am, so I think he'd be okay with putting it up.
Nice.
There are people that were like, hey, there was a police officer talking to Nico yesterday. Do you know what that was about? And I was like, no. And I'm like asking around, and finally Kevin was like, oh yeah, that was his cousin.
Yep, that's my boy.
We thought maybe you were in trouble with the law.
Officer 34 at the Foster City PD. The other person I would ask is another cousin of mine. He's just an overall dependable person. Mm. He's going to be graduating soon, so I know he won't have that much going on. I don't think he'd ask too many questions. He'd be like, idiot, I'll get you out.
Perfect.
Because I've got one other cousin who is notoriously hard to reach. If I called him on the phone, there's a 50% chance he just wouldn't pick up. If That's I text him, I'm not going to hear back for 2 days.
I don't think anyone would ever call me to get bailed out.
No.
If they had one phone call, you're like, yeah, Brandon's not answering.
And then the rest are just too frugal and wouldn't pay up.
You're like, man, Nico, I really want to help you, but I like my money more than that.
I'm trying to buy a house.
Okay, you've got to have one more, right?
I think somebody else needs to ask the question. I just don't know who.
Daniel? By the way, should we tell people like what Daniel does and who he is if they haven't seen
him? Oh, we just found him.
We just recently posted Daniel's bail.
Sure.
And this is part of the payback program.
Uh-huh. It's the only part. One step.
Daniel is a big part of our children's department. Children.
Some would say maybe the biggest.
What do you do over there?
Yeah, I lead our elementary ministry at CPC. We have a lot of fun, kindergarten to fifth grade, learning about Jesus and everything.
What's it like? What's it like over there on a Sunday morning?
Yeah, a lot of fun, loud music, lots of kids sort of wandering around. Supervised. Goldfish. Supervised, don't worry. Yeah, eating goldfish.
When I go over there, I have had the privilege of seeing Daniel have like a little talk. And I got the sense, Daniel, that you're the guy who's going to have a little talk with people if they need to have a talking to it. Are you that person?
To clarify, you're talking about like 6-year-olds, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. If the 6-year-olds are having a tough morning, I'm probably going to be the one to try and figure out why that is and restore them to proper standing in a Christ-like fashion.
So very gentle, the law, but gentle.
Yeah, I'd say that's a great way to describe my personality.
Like 6-year-old stuff, like you got to keep your hands to yourself and
right.
Don't no spit no at other kids.
It's a lot like that last conversation you and I had.
That's right. I've never learned.
It's because you didn't have me. My question is, here's the scenario. You guys have all taken an SAT before, something like that, a standardized test. You study for months.
In Iowa, we took the ACTs.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I bet you did.
I've heard those are harder.
Well, I didn't take the SATs.
There's science on that one, right?
There's science on all of them. There's not a
science on the SAT.
Reading, writing, math. Is there not?
Oh, okay.
Oh, there's science in the SATs.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, that'd be good to know.
Okay, so the scenario is you got to go take that test, or you can send in a proxy, if you will, someone to go in your place, take the test, and we'll say if they don't get a decent score, your life as you know it is over.
Wow.
Who are you going to call?
I think I would call my cousin Evan, or maybe Kevin. But probably Evan. Because Evan, he like the stuff he retains in his brain. Like one time so he went to Princeton on like a full ride.
Oh, okay. Gosh. He's that's what I have to say.
Crazy smart. And that's not what impresses me. What impressed me was we went to this bowling event called Lebowski Fest. Mm-hmm. And it's a bowling event based on the movie The Big Lebowski, which I'm not endorsing here because it's a questionable movie. But
it is something of an American classic.
Yeah. So we went and you have to dress up like someone from the movie. And then we knew that there was going to be trivia. And so we watched the movie and took some notes. And I did pretty well. And he won the trivia against all of these like crazy Lebowski nerds. He demolished them. I think he missed like one question the whole time.
Wow.
So I would ask him. I bet he would. And he's currently still a math teacher.
Jeez, yeah.
So I think he's got it still fresh in his mind.
Well, yeah, sure. That makes a big difference.
Yeah. You guys probably all want Evan too, huh?
Or Kevin.
Yeah.
I don't want Kevin.
Oh.
We have established on this podcast that mathematics is not his strong suit.
Have we?
Really? That doesn't add up.
For all the writing and literature and English skills that he has, which are vast, Mm-hmm. It's the rest of the test that I wouldn't necessarily trust him on.
Mm.
Yeah. Not to talk ill of the man when he's not here, of course.
Sorry, Kevin, if you're listening to this, which I know you're not. All right. So you're not. We've established not Kevin for Nico.
Excellent.
While we're at it, we can also establish not me for the exact same reasons.
In my head, you're a mathlete, Nico.
Yeah, I'm not. Too.
Nico, do you know what PEMDAS is? Can you tell us about that?
It's an acronym.
Uh-huh. Order of operations that I cannot recall the pieces of.
Parentheses, exponents, multiply. You take it from there. Go ahead.
Maybe Daniel's the guy.
Daniel's the one.
Well, that leads me to my point where I was going to say I don't need it. I'm going to turn my phone off. I'm good. I'm going in, and I'm getting every question.
Dang. Wow.
Okay.
Are you like really good with school stuff?
I don't know how to like quantify that. I think so.
Wow.
How good of a student were you?
I knew how to get the job done, you know? Okay. I feel like maybe not model student in terms of like lots of time spent.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I know how to, or I should say past tense, this is all behind me, but knew how to clear that minimum, get that A, and get home with time to spare for
that's my leisure activities. So an efficient learner.
I would say so.
You got that A.
Yeah.
That's good.
Just one.
It's impressive.
It's all you need.
It's all you needed.
I had enough.
Wow. So Daniel would take his own. How about you, Rach?
I think I would call Shalane.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. She knows a lot, I feel like, about how things work.
She's a brainiac. She's a brainiac, and she doesn't ever flaunt it.
No.
So you wouldn't, you know, she doesn't, like, lead with that.
Yeah. It's more just when you ask a question about something, you're like, I wonder how this works. She's like, well, here's how it works. I'm like, how'd you know this?
She wouldn't say she doesn't need help on an SAT on a podcast, for example.
I think I want to call Daniel's bluff and actually pay for him to take the SATs right now, and let's see what he would do.
It's the season.
It would be fun to just all four of us take the SATs.
That would not be
fun. Oh, we can do a practice test.
Let's just see who would win. I'm sure I would lose.
For a podcast, actually.
I wouldn't mind now that it's not required.
Yeah.
Like it's just for funsies.
Could all write an essay.
Well, didn't you tutor a little bit?
Not anything above fifth grade.
Oh, okay.
I'll get you through.
Just based on when Olivia, who's a sophomore, asked me for help with her math.
Yeah.
Oh.
And how I'm like, oh, well, I can't do that.
She's doing like geometry.
I don't even know what she's doing. I think she's doing algebra
shapes
2.
In the mix.
Algebra 2, I think. Nice.
I think I would pull a Daniel, but not because I think I'm smart I think I'd do particularly well. It's because I have a massive chip on my shoulder and don't want to ask for help from any of my friends who I know are busy with other things.
You got to prove yourself. Asking someone to take, that's like a whole day commitment kind of thing.
That's a whole, know? Yeah, that's at least. Day. Because yeah. If they also have to study for any of it, that's
sure,
extra commitment.
Prep. That's a really big commitment.
Huh? Yeah. And like for what gain on their end?
Literally none.
I'm not rich enough to
just
make it
a favor.
Worth it. And I don't have any favors that thing. Massive to call in.
Right. And then when you get in trouble for that, you're going to need to go back to them to ask for bail.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
So you can't pick the same person.
True.
Is it illegal?
I'm pretty sure.
I don't think
you can. If they pose as you.
Because it's impersonating
you, yeah.
someone.
I'm sure you wouldn't have like police at your door.
I don't know.
You could be denied kind of access illegal. To colleges, I guess.
Definitely. Well, I'm past that.
Would be academic fraud.
Okay, so I do have a question for you guys, and I'm wondering if you have ever had, like, when you consider what that the depths of despair that the psalmist was in Psalm 130, if you've ever experienced anything like that. And I want to be specific with this, anything like that that is self-inflicted. Because it's often that we have a lot of despair. Well, maybe not often, but all of us have probably been in despair that is not self-inflicted. That was due to our circumstances in life or someone else or whatever. I think it's easier to talk about those. I think it's harder to talk about the ones that are our own dumb fault. I know that's a deep ask at the beginning of this podcast, but is anybody willing to share a despair if you care?
Yeah, I think I care. This would have been a few years ago. No, less than that. It would have been right after I first got hired at CPC part-time. I was working two jobs and taking two or three STEM classes at community college. And that was a schedule that I had kind of set up for myself because I wanted to go to school and I also wanted to get my money up, and I also didn't want to quit one of the two jobs until I absolutely had to. And at some point, of course, after it was way too late in the semester to drop without it going on your record, I realized that without a doubt, I was going to fail Calculus 2 again. And that was due to a variety of factors. I was playing way too many video games. I didn't have good study habits. I still don't, but that's... I wasn't putting enough time into school, and I also couldn't because I was so busy with everything else. So I remember at some point that kind of self-inflicted despair just hit me like a semi-truck in my room. It was like 8:30 at night, and I was pretending like I could study enough to do well on the test the next day. And I just went for a walk, bawled my eyes out, came back, talked to my parents, bawled some more, because I was basically confessing that I had failed at some of the most important goals for the semester. And my dad gave me his patented, in a very loving way, kind of a, well, look at what you're trying to do. What did you expect? And my mom, of course, was very encouraging, but I don't know, that was kind of a point where I can't quite quantify what it did for my outlook on life or the way I approach those kinds of situations.
Yeah.
But that was definitely a low and very, very much self-inflicted, which I think hurt extra because, yeah, there was nobody else I could blame.
So was there like a pick yourself up from the bootstraps kind of vibe, or was there a moment where you tried to run to God about the thing, or did you feel like God wouldn't really help you because you caused this mess and you got to clean it up yourself?
I definitely didn't go to God because it was so self-inflicted. I was like, what is he gonna tell me? Especially since I hadn't been listening very much at that point. I wasn't reading my Bible much. Prayer was kind of a robotic thing. So my response was just, despair. And what do I do now? How do I fix this? What do I have to do to fix this? Or what do I have to just accept?
I love that you shared that, Nico, because I actually think, and I didn't talk about this very much, but I thought about it and I just didn't have time, but I think that it's really common, and I recognize it. I'm wondering if Rachel and Daniel, you guys recognize this too, where you get yourself in a predicament and because of your high bar for yourself, you're like, well, I wouldn't have any patience with me, so why would God? And so you don't even allow him into the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember when I was growing up, you know, as a pastor's kid, was around church all the time. And I kept hearing this phrase over and over again. People would only disclose their failures if it was preceded by before I was a believer. That was the safe time where you could say what you used to be bad at before God redeemed you and saved you from all of that stuff. And as a kid, I would hear them say, oh, well, you know, before I was a believer, this is what I did, you know. And, you know, I was baptized in fourth grade. And I would just remember thinking as a little kid, like, I thought I was a believer, but I still do bad stuff sometimes. Mm-hmm. And not really being able to, like, get to the bottom of this whole tension of being a Christian and a Christ follower and someone who wants to become like Jesus, but also being broken and messing up. And I think that sometimes the church, which should be a hospital for the broken, I think sometimes the church can end up being a place that is more like a, I don't know, like we have to fake that everything is okay. Mm-hmm. And so what happens with that is we get to this place where we're broken, like what you were talking about, Nico, and we say, God doesn't want any part of this. And I think that that's probably not what we see. I think when you look at the character of God, I don't think you see a God. Certainly if he felt that way about us, he wouldn't engage at all. Mm. He never would have come down onto earth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because any illusion that we are under, that we're not broken and messing up, is just that. It's an illusion. So I'm glad you shared it like that. I'm curious with you or with all of you guys, if you consider that what I said towards the beginning, God undoes in a certain way, God undoes brokenness, and acknowledging the tension that we're experiencing. Do you guys, is that hard for you to get your head around? Do you believe it? If you do believe it, how do you see that? Like, I'm curious what you guys think.
I think it calls into question like how final we can view brokenness to be. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
It calls into question how final we can view brokenness to be. Because you said we can't simply undo everything, which is true. But if we linger there, then there's no hope in that either. Because it's true, like we can't undo things that have been done. But I think that brokenness, or like that statement, isn't the final part of it. What you said after was there's a sense that the kingdom of God is actively undoing the brokenness. So God sees past that brokenness, whereas sometimes I think we can end up in this state of finality of like, okay, what's done is done, and there's no hope for moving forward from here. So when you have a framework like, now that I'm a believer, and if I encounter brokenness, then there's something wrong. Like, I can't move past that. I think the second part of the kingdom of God actively undoing the brokenness challenges that and moves it forward to a different understanding of how God encounters or deals with brokenness.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. What do you think, Danny boy?
Yeah, some of what you were saying made me think, when I am in moments of despair, like you said, or just difficult places, I think I make it so much harder on myself because I feel a responsibility to be doing good, to be doing well, to not be having self-inflicted problems like that. And it's so funny because everything we believe kind of hinges on the idea that we're all really bad. And we need God, we need Jesus, because he is good and we are not. And that's end all be all. But when it comes time to talk about what that looks like, and how are we bad, and in what ways, and how does that hurt us, then it's embarrassing. It's shameful, right? Like, it's hard to address and bring up because you don't want to be bad, but you are. We all are. And it shouldn't be embarrassing to name the ways in which Jesus is healing us, because that's an amazing thing that we should be joyful about and proud of. And it's good to name, honestly. I think so.
And I actually like, I don't know, this isn't theologically formed, I don't know, but I actually like the word broken versus bad. And I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Sure.
Just because, you know, like, I just feel like there's more compassion in broken. It's still wrong and it still causes pain and it still, you know, but it doesn't, to use a word that Nico used earlier, it doesn't apply nefarious, you know, that we're like, have deeply evil intent. And I guess maybe sometimes we do.
Yeah.
It reflects the original design though, because if something was broken, it wasn't always, right?
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Broken things could be fixed. Our human understanding of bad is that bad is bad. Bad does not necessarily become good. I think the belief that God is undoing brokenness, to me, is necessary. Brandon, you briefly talked about the fact that in this Advent season, that the pervasiveness of brokenness is kind of made apparent. And without the promise or belief that God is actively working to undo that, there's no hope. And if there's no hope, then your reasons for dealing with it at all kind of start to go out the window. Which is also why I think it's so important to get past the "I was only struggling with this brokenness before I was a believer" mindset that you mentioned, which again, CPC does a very good job of not adding to. But there's this almost capitalist twist on the testimony. The story of a person who was an alcoholic for 20 years before finding the Lord, and then miraculously being freed of alcoholism, sells a lot better than the person who was a Christian for 40 years, encountered problems with his family or his marriage or his work, and fell into alcoholism for however long. But that does happen just as often as the other one does.
And it shatters, yeah, it kind of shatters your paradigm a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Because otherwise you're left thinking, oh, well, I'm physically incapable of falling into that because I'm redeemed based on all these stories. But if people were more open with what the kind of things they struggle with on a daily basis, I think it would become readily apparent that no one is safe from that. And we're allowed to struggle with those things, and we're tested with those things at all sorts of different times.
I mean, I don't know how you could ever rationalize that in your head when you have something like Romans 7. Mm-hmm. And you see Paul, like, who is this monster in our faith, wrote most of the New Testament, had this huge Damascus, you know, story where God, like, met him and he completely repented, changed directions, and yet he's sitting here saying, everything I want to do, I don't do, and everything I don't want to do, I do.
Yep.
And I just don't, like, you can just see it's this, like, if this is not a problem that we look at in our rearview mirror. And I that's why one of the things I love about this is that it is a song, because a song is meant to be sung over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know, we can come back to it and we can say, here's a new day and another chance for me to follow God's grace and mercy. And that idea, what I was getting from the before I was a believer thing, which I don't think was meant to be this way, but the idea I was getting is that if you do it right, as soon as you start following Jesus, you don't struggle with that stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. And there are people that believe that you get to a point where you just don't sin. And I think that's a really destructive thought for us.
No. I've talked with Kevin about this a fair amount, and he always likened it to the layers of an onion. It is entirely possible, and the prayer is that you will get past whatever the largest sin that you struggle with is. But once that layer of the onion is gone, there are still plenty more beneath it. And you'll just keep drilling into more and more, all the way down to the core of yourself, that you will still find is stained with sin. So even if you do miraculously get freed from X, Y, or Z, the rest of the alphabet is in there just waiting to be uncovered. Because at the end of the day, you are still a very broken person relying entirely on grace.
I think I loved when you said that the posture of our hearts matter in it. Because you said if our hearts are tender enough and then our pride is humbled enough, that puts us in a posture where we can then cry out to God. But it's hard to get to that posture sometimes.
It is painful. I mean, I said that because I have been what I like to call being drugged behind a truck. You know, like if you drag a piece of wood behind a truck long enough, it's going to like eventually develop round edges and going to be ground down, you know? And I think that, you know, when you're broken, you remember that. And you remember that those are also, like, when you look back through my journals, my most intense moments of growth are always when I'm getting drugged behind a truck and God is grinding down my edges. I'm curious, how do you guys feel like you are at the waiting?
It's so hard.
What's hard about it?
I'm thinking about things in the long term is important, and knowing the end is important. But there's also the sense in which I know that if God wanted to, he wouldn't make me wait. But I still have to wait, and I don't know how long I'm waiting. And that bugs me, since we live in a world where I can get almost anything in the world delivered to my door in 2 days or less.
Yeah.
Any piece of digital media I can have instant access to through the internet. A friend is a phone call away or a text away that can be connected with instantly.
Yeah.
But with this, with whatever it might be that's grinding away at you on a daily basis, that just refuses to go away as quickly.
Mm.
And so, you know, talking about shattering paradigms, I find myself wanting to use Kevin's vocabulary again. it runs contrary to the zeitgeist.
Whatever that means.
Yes, of course. Yes. And we'll just respond to you like we do to Kevin. Yes, Kevin, that makes total sense. Yeah, we understand.
I liked what you said in there. You mentioned not knowing how long the wait's going to be. Mm. I feel like that's a big part of it. And that's where, you know, faith comes in. But I think of when you go to Disneyland or something and you're getting in the line on the ride, it's going to tell you about how long you're expecting to wait. It's 30 minutes, hour, 2 hours.
Like if you didn't know at Disneyland,
it would be crazy.
Would you get in the line?
Right, right.
Maybe there are some lines where you're like, the payoff here is good enough.
Sure, that you don't need to know. Yeah. It could be 3 hours of your life gone. And
could be three days, it was worth it. Who knows?
I look at that number.
Yeah,
yes. I mean, everyone absolutely does, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, I only
you're
fast
weighing
now,
the cost versus the benefit, right?
Yeah.
And when you become aware of an issue within you that you need to take to God, and there's this process of changing and undoing brokenness, you know it's not going to be a sprint, right? Mm. It's going to be more of the marathon, but you don't know how long it is. You don't have an estimation. Amazon's not going to give you the day your package will arrive.
Mm-hmm. There's no tracking number.
Right, and you just have to keep at it faithfully nonetheless, and know that God is going to get you there at the best possible time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you keep at it.
How do you trust when you're waiting, Rach? How do you trust in God's word? I'm saying that, I'm asking you that question knowing that it feels like a very churchy, Christian-y, unhelpful way to phrase it. It can be a little bit simplistic, you know?
Yeah.
If I was in a really, really deep, dark place and you said, you just need to trust in God's word, I would dismiss you from my presence.
Right.
It just feels so cheap sometimes, but maybe make it uncheap for us.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I will try.
I'll
try to make it bougie.
Bougie faith. There's a book title.
Wow. Hey.
Yeah, I think so much of how I'm going to answer is reflected in how I wait so poorly. But I think I'm over-eagerly optimistic, but fake, like not actually optimistic. So I like have things that I say to get me through the waiting, but it's not actually helping. And I know scripture is true, and I know that the promises in God's word are true, but if I just do that with his word, but don't actually like put stake in that, then it just feels like really cliche. And that can be where I go with other people who are waiting too, because it's what I've done for myself. But even as I was listening to your message, like even when you were talking about how you would call your father-in-law and why you would call him, and how he's stayed true to his word in the past, I think so much of it is looking at God's character as well as his word. Because if we detach his word from who he is, then it's just words. Like, it's just scripture. But if we tie it in with who he is, then it's story of how he's fulfilled his promises time and time again. And even with understanding like the waiting of the Israelites, like he took them on the long road, or when traveling with his disciples, he chose to go through Samaria, which was far from efficient, but God was still working in the waiting. Sometimes it's hard to see when we can't look back at the situation we're in now and realize, oh, this is what God's doing in the waiting. And that's where I really struggle. But when I go back to his character, that scene in his word and that scene in the life of other people around me, especially who are faithfully waiting and can affirm those things in his character, it's a lot easier when I can tie his character in with his word versus just trying to find a verse to carry me through the day. I think it's both that are needed.
That's really good. You know what popped into my brain just now in this? I'm saying this with so much love and respect. I absolutely just adore my parents and think they did a very good job. With that said, I will say this. Faithfulness wasn't emphasized in our house. It wasn't really emphasized to the point where, like, when Katie and I got married, and, you know, like, when you get married, you blend your two families in a way. You know, you don't, like, spend every waking moment together, but you do have to figure out, like, this is what your family gave you. This is what your family gave you. And each of you comes in thinking that what your family gave you is better than what their family gave them. I don't know if you've experienced this yet in all of your years of marriage yet, Danielle. So my family was really, really good at, you know, loving, like being very loving and tender and, you know, putting your hand on their shoulder. And they're going to be the people that are going to help talk you through deep emotional things. And so, you know, I've developed a good way of, like, listening to people and talking to people. And I'm really, really grateful for the way that they have kind of installed this, like, emotional intelligence. But as we have grown and we have kids and our kids are now exposed to the two different grandparents and watching what happens when you start seeing which set of grandparents is the faithful grandparents, the ones that, like, will show up and the ones that are like, yeah, we're going to show up probably, but we might have something else that comes up. And it has given me, the reason I brought up my father-in-law is because it has given me a really good sense of faithfulness being a way that you show love. And it's not honestly a way that I valued a lot until I started really experiencing it and being like, you know, wait, when you, like, you don't think you need someone who's faithful until you are in the middle of a Nevada desert. And you're like, who the heck could I possibly call? And when that person comes to rescue you and show you and help you, then your mind is blown. And you're like, how could I have ever lived without faithfulness? And yeah, so I think understanding, like, I was just thinking last night, I did after preaching, I didn't feel like I was busy enough this weekend. So I went and I did a private party. I played music for a private party, and she really wanted me to sit down and interact with the guests. That was, like, part of it. I was like, I'm here to play music. And she's like, please, will you just sit and have dinner and interact with my guests? And I was like, oh gosh, I'm not ready for this. But it was 100% God, because I sat down next to this lady who started talking to me. And when she found out I was a pastor, she started talking to me about her son who took his own life last year. And she wasn't able to really talk about it at all to a lot of different people. She's been trying to talk about it, but she really is just stuck. And as she talked to me, she says, I can't do anything. The fact that I'm here tonight is a miracle, just talking with people, because I don't like to leave my house. All I can do is just sit and just be full of sadness and full of despair. And I didn't have any magic words for her. But Rachel, to your point, what I did have was, first I was able to say, like, God is big enough to handle your stuff, your anger. Like, bring it. If you're angry, like, don't stay stuck in that. Bring it to him. But the other thing is other parts of God's character that, like, I don't know what he's going to do with the situation, but I've seen him work enough to know that he will show up. If you can just offer all of this to him in that waiting, he will. I don't know when, and I don't know at what point, but yeah, that's what we have to offer people, is God. And out of the context of just Bible out of the context of God's character, I think sometimes can do so much damage. But if you mix them both, it's really a beautiful thing.
It's the context and knowing the history of God's character across thousands of years that's contained in those pages. Because even if you don't immediately relate to the story of Job or Saul or David, reading about those and understanding what all these titans of biblical stories and the faith went through and had to deal with, and how even at their most perfect, they were still severely imperfect, does amazing things for understanding how constant God's character and promises are.
As I was going through this and trying to relate this to the Christmas psalm, to the Christmas story, it really gave me, like, I really thought about the Christmas story in a new way, like just really thinking about what it would be like for this eternal, massive God, the kind of God that we can't even see like a shadow of, you know, when we see that in the Old Testament, becoming a baby. And like, it's kind of a joke in our house that I don't really like babies. I joke around that they're a leech on society.
But in the strictest sense, yes.
But if you think about a baby, they cannot even hold, when they're first born, like baby giraffes get out and they start walking.
Barely, but yes.
But they do. A baby can't even hold its head up.
Do you relate a little bit?
And I just thought about it. Just like, man, like, how crazy is that? That God would become a baby.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about, oh, he would become a baby in this humble manger. Forget the manger, dude. Mm. He's a baby. Mm. Yeah. And like, what that says about God's willingness to come after his creation, what that says about the redemption of God, out of all the times when I have wanted to walk away from faith, and there have been moments where I'm like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I had so many questions, or I just unanswered things in my view of God. The thing that always brings me back is God's redemption, that God will stop at nothing to get your attention, to come after you. I think Bryson last week talked about this with the prodigal son. If you want to know the heart of the father, look at how he reacted to his son. And it's not how we would react. In some ways, in many ways, God's reaction towards us is this counterintuitive, like, you know, I don't know. It's just so crazy. And that's why I brought up the whole kinsman redeemer thing. And to be honest, I didn't have enough time to really go into all of that. And I didn't even have enough time to really research it. Rachel, I asked you if you knew a little bit about it. You said you read a little bit about it. You were telling me something right before we started this podcast. Something about him being close enough or something like that.
Yeah. I was just trying to look at the similarities between Boaz and Ruth's story and his role as kinsman redeemer and the connection with Jesus. And I was just looking at an article that was talking about the requirements of a kinsman redeemer. And there were a few things that it listed. It said you had to be kin, so you had to be related in some way. So you had to be of the same kind. You had to be willing. If the person wasn't willing, they couldn't be forced to do it. So some people would decline.
Oh, I thought it was like a requirement. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then you had to be able to redeem. So you had to have the means to follow through. If you didn't have the financial means to make the redemption, then you can't be the redeemer, no matter how good your intentions are. And then the last part was you have to pay the price in full. So the first part, going back to having to be kin with Jesus, Jesus became like us. Like you said on Sunday, you said he took on human skin and frailty. He became like us and took on human flesh. He was willing to do it. And I just went to a Advent retreat last week, and one of the questions that they had us sit with was, imagine the conversation between the Trinity about Jesus, like before he came as a baby, like what that conversation between the three of them must have been like.
Right, which one of us is going down?
Yeah. But even from the perspective of like Jesus's willingness, like I think a lot of times we might even be tempted to think like, was it the Father who coerced him into doing this or forced him into doing it? But it was a three-part conversation this whole time.
Mm.
Jesus was willing, and then he was able to redeem. He had the means to do it, and he paid the full price for our sin. He didn't leave the work undone.
Yeah.
There's another part of that story that I think of sometimes. After Boaz agreed to redeem Ruth, he had to go to another person that was sort of ahead of him in the line to redeem, if you will. And he had to sort of get his permission to do this. And when he put the offer out there that this person could buy Naomi's estate and sort of inherit all that, he was into the idea. And then Boaz informed him that it would come with Ruth, basically, that she was attached to it. And his reply in Ruth chapter 4, verse 6 is, "Then I cannot redeem it because it might endanger my own estate." And that makes me think, like Brandon said earlier, not much theological stuff behind this, but it just made me think, Kevin will say something to the effect of, there's always going to be something that competes for your time or your attention, or something is always forming you or turning you into the next version of yourself, right? And it's all about who you're going to let or what you're going to let do that to you. And there's always something that will be interested in you for their own benefit or because it feels good or whatever it is. But those things, they can be so fragile or frail because in this example, it's like, well, that's going to hurt me, so never mind, you know? And that's not Jesus's approach to us. His is the opposite in that he does take on that pain. And
this is going to hurt me.
Yeah. And I will do it gladly.
Wow.
And that's what it takes to be the kinsman redeemer, right? To know that there's stake in this, there's cost in this, emotional, financial. This is going to change my whole life, you know. For Boaz, it meant getting married to someone, right? And despite that, he did it, and Jesus does that to us as well. In that story as well, Ruth is a foreigner, right? Like, she's not part of their community. It was kind of just by chance that she was there. Naomi didn't even originally want to bring her back home with her. But Ruth's faithfulness to Naomi is what we should be modeling in our faithfulness to God, because we want to go where he goes, and he will redeem us.